The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The country has a burglar in chief. Also, do walls and military presence suddenly work? And Biden's big lie. This is the Dinesh D'Souza podcast.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy, in a time of confusion, division, and lies. We need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
This episode is sponsored by MyPillow. I'm going to have Mike Lindell, the founder and CEO of MyPillow, on the podcast for a short interview a little bit later. Why? Because he's under a coordinated attack from retailers and from the left trying to pull his products. And why? Because he's so outspoken on behalf of Trump. So Mike is a very brave man. We need to support him. And he's got great stuff, not just great pillows, but great all kinds of stuff. He's actually found the best cotton in the world in a region where the Sahara Desert, the Nile River, and the Mediterranean Sea all come together to create the ideal weather conditions for growing cotton. His new Giza Dream Bed Sheets are made with this long staple cotton, and he guarantees they're the most comfortable sheets you'll ever own. The first night you sleep on his sheets, you'll never want to sleep on anything else. And Debbie and I can testify to this. The Giza Dream Sheets are available in a whole bunch of colors, and like all of Mike's products, they come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. So right now, you can buy one, get one free. Call 800-876-0227 and use promo code Dinesh. For a limited time, buy one, get one free. Call 800-876-0227 or just go to MyPillow.com. Don't forget to use promo code Dinesh. Today is a big day in America. It's Inauguration Day. And this is one of the great rituals of American politics in which a new president is inaugurated. But for those of us who have lived through and seen a whole bunch of these, we know that nothing is normal. There's something off about this one, and it's not just in the meaning of it. You can see it with your eyes. Washington, D.C. is kind of a ghost town today, and that in itself is odd. No one is present. No one showed up. Where are all the 80 million people who were wild for Joe Biden? Well, they've all stayed home. Now, you can say, well, that's because of the virus, Dinesh. Well, the truth of it is, Washington, D.C. has this empty, hollow feel. And I think it's a metaphor for something bigger, an emptiness and hollowness, perhaps, in the American soul. Now, the other thing you see in Washington, D.C. right now is the military. They're all over the place. And a lot of them. And on top of that, Biden has hired his own private security. So you've got private security, you've got the National Guard, you've got the military, and this is what that looks like. So, wow. I mean, is this America? You kind of feel like you're in the Congo or the Far East, some third world despotism where the military is mobilized to protect the people in power from the people. The other thing that's going on is walls. Washington, D.C. has become a city of walls. There are fences everywhere. There are tall walls. And this alone is eerie because they're all put up by the same people who said that walls don't work. Walls don't work. But apparently walls do work when you have to protect the political class. Then you have guns and soldiers and walls. But evidently when you have to protect the country, then, yo, we don't need ICE, Dinesh. Why are we having ICE officers mobilized on the border? We don't need a wall. Biden's going to stop the wall on his first day. So it's important to protect this political class, but evidently that same protection is not important for the American people. Now, Trump never had any of this at his inauguration. You just have to flash back 4 years to realize, where was the military at Trump's inauguration? Where were all these high walls? There weren't any. They didn't exist. And you might say, well, that's because there wasn't the same kind of threat. Well, wait a minute. Actually, it was far, far worse. In Trump's inauguration, there was massive Antifa presence. There was rioting. There were assaults on people. There was the breaking of store windows. And so if you ever thought you needed more police, more protection, you would think it was then. People say, well, Dinesh, the big difference, of course, is that we've just had a coup attempt. We've just had an insurrection. We've just had an attempt to take over the government. This kind of rhetoric, by the way, here it is in full-blown hyperbole from the progressive magazine, The American Prospect. I'm going to quote. On January 6th, our second civil war began with an insurrection the likes of which haven't, I think he means hasn't, been seen since the last war on American soil. As if this was the start of a new civil war, and this was the firing on Fort Sumter. Now, you only have to step back for a moment and meet these insurrectionists to recognize who these people really are, and then you can gauge for yourself the level of threat that they pose. So I want to introduce you to perhaps the most glamorous and the most recognizable of the insurrectionists, the guy who made his way right into the building. Let's take a look. Here he is.
What I do is I practice something known as shamanism. And in shamanism, they sing, they dance, they drum, and they inform the community. They dress up in a way that chases off evil spirits. The singing and the drumming is about chasing off evil spirits because sound actually precedes electromagnetic activity. So when you sing and you drum, especially when you do so really loudly, you end up affecting the quantum realm. And this has been being done for thousands of years to ward off evil spirits, ward off negative timelines, and to basically bring positive energy. So part of the reason why I dress this way is because if we were going to have like a infiltrator or something like that, they'd be a witch, they'd be a sorcerer or something like that on the dark side. So I practice life magic. I practice the light side or the positive side of shamanism. And when they see me, they go, oh, yeah, we got a big fish out here. We better not try and stir things up.
Now, whatever this is, it's not insurrection. I mean, this guy, Jacob Chansley, is a failed actor. Lights, camera, action. I mean, put him in the play Hamilton if you want. But this whole notion that they have to protect against a new civil war is preposterous. Preposterous. Another very disturbing thing that's happened the last couple of days is loyalty oaths and vetting of the military and the National Guard. The FBI has literally been checking into the social media posts of military and National Guard to see if they might be right-wing, if they might be Trump sympathizers. And this is a line, again, you may almost call it the merger, the politicization of the military. The idea here is that you can't count on the military to protect the country. These, even though these people take an oath, you can't trust them. What you've got to do is ferret out the ones that are disloyal so that the only ones left are loyal to the party in power. Again, any of us who are raised in third world countries recognize the signs here. And what makes all this particularly strange is that the people who now champion walls and champion military vetting and champion this militarization of Washington, D.C. are the same people who claim to be against walls and defund the police. And we don't like the military presence. They were really upset when Trump called in the military to stop the Antifa riots later in the administration, the more recent ones that occurred several months ago. Imagine if Trump had done the same thing. Imagine if Trump had said, I'm gonna vet the people who are going to be at my 2016 inauguration. I'm going to make sure that they're all Trumpsters. I'm going to try to find out if any of them are leftists. I'm going to find out if any of them have been lifelong Democratic voters, if they've shown sympathies for radical left-wing groups, and I'm going to root them out. You can only imagine the outrage. So the bottom line of it is, and I think this is very eye-opening for us, we have to realize that the left is dishonest to the core. When they say things like defund the police, they don't really mean that. What they want is a police that does their work, a police that they can sick on their opponents. When they say we don't like the military presence, they mean we don't like the military presence for you, but we love the military presence to protect us. When they say we don't like walls and walls don't work, oh, Dinesh, Robert Frost, something there is that doesn't love a wall. That line is only quoted when they're talking about a wall around the country, when they're talking about a wall around their home or around their private club or around their gated community or around Washington, D.C. That's when they quote the other line from Frost. Well, Dinesh, good fences make good neighbors. It's very important to have the right kind of protection against the wrong kind of people. So duplicity is the name of the game in Biden's America. We're going to be seeing a lot of it. And this podcast is going to be on it. So get ready for a new president. Get ready for a new era. There's going to be a lot to cover. We'll be right back. We're now at the mercy of one-party control and an agenda driven by tax-and-spend economics. I don't need to get into all the social ramifications, but fiscally, you can expect compounded growth of our national debt and the systematic devaluation of the U.S. dollar. So there's really only one question. What is your plan? What are you doing now to protect your savings and your retirement? I'm excited to have Birch Gold Group as an advertiser because Birch Gold Group will help you diversify a portion of your savings, an IRA or eligible 401k into an IRA backed by gold and silver. They're the premier precious metals IRA company in America with an A+ BBB rating, countless five-star reviews, and thousands of satisfied customers. There's a tidal wave of inflation coming. Debbie and I are getting ready for it. Gold is your hedge. So text Dinesh to 484848 for your free information kit on precious metals IRA or to speak with a Birch Gold representative today. Time is running out, but you can protect your savings now. Text Dinesh to 484848. What kind of a man is taking control in the White House? Lots of people have focused during the campaign on the kind of senility of Joe Biden. And there were certainly plenty of clips of Joe Biden mumbling and bumbling, and he doesn't know where he is, and his wife is speaking, but he looks like he's wandering around in an old folks' home. And there's no question Biden is going through an era of decrepitude. It's kind of funny that the Democrats were calling for the 25th Amendment to be applied to Trump. Biden is probably eligible for that consideration, at least, on his very first day. Now, it's true that Biden sometimes has lucid moments, but there are other times he doesn't. I mean, can we afford to have a president that is occasionally lucid? Can we afford to have a president with his finger on the nuclear codes who sort of fades in and out of full cognition? The deeper problem with Biden, however, is not his decrepitude, not his intellectual decrepitude. It is his moral turpitude, or to put it somewhat differently, the real problem with Biden is here is one deeply corrupt guy. So this is just worth knowing. We have essentially put a burglar in charge of Fort Knox. We have taken a guy who has made corruption a specialty in his career. This is how he got so rich. I mean, here's the point. Biden says, I've been in public office. I've been in public service for 40 years. If you've been in public service for 40 years, how do you become a centimillionaire? How do you get $100 million on a government salary? How do you own multiple homes? How is it that you have private planes, domestic staff, all the accoutrements of the super rich? Now, Biden could say, well, the money doesn't come from me, Dinesh. It's come from Hunter Biden and Frank Biden and James Biden, my two brothers, and my son. You know, they've really made good. And that's kind of true. They have made good on your name. In other words, the product that they were selling is you, Joe Biden. Here's a clip from the movie Trump Card. And I'm going into this in some detail for the simple reason that this is the kind of stuff that was covered up by the media and was truly suppressed by digital media. We talk about digital media suppressing just the New York Post story about the Biden laptop, but that was just literally the tip of the iceberg. There's a whole lot beneath that, and we get into it a little bit in Trump Card. So check this out. Let's track a little bit of the Biden family racket. Biden's brother, James Biden.
Go back to November of 2010. A guy named Kevin Justice shows up at the vice president's office in the White House. 3 weeks later, Kevin Justice appoints James Biden, who has no experience, as the new executive vice president of Hillstone, a construction company that he has just formed. Then 6 months, this new construction company lands a contract to build 100,000 homes in Iraq.
And what is that contract worth?
About $1.5 billion. During this time, Joe Biden was the point person on Iraqi reconstruction.
Now, there's another Biden brother.
I'm Frank Biden. I'm the non-attorney senior advisor to clients statewide.
So Frank Biden had been a largely unsuccessful real estate agent in Florida. His brother is elected vice president of the United States in 2009, and he decides he's going to get into the energy business. His brother in the spring of 2009 makes a trip to Costa Rica, meets with Costa Rican President Arias. Within a couple of months, Frank Biden is in Costa Rica. He has meetings with Costa Rican government officials, and he signs an exclusive deal with the Costa Rican National Power Company for green energy projects in Costa Rica. His company, Sun Fund Americas, is involved in a project that includes $47 million in taxpayer-backed loans in Jamaica.
Welcome to our burglar-in-chief. And we can expect him and his whole corrupt family, the Biden crime family, to be running around the place. You can watch your wallet. I'm not sure anybody's going to be watching the nation's wallet. Certainly not the media. Rudy Giuliani said yesterday, this is the first known crook to be inaugurated president of the United States. And I'm not sure that's entirely true. It is true that Biden built his crookery on the model of someone who wanted to be president of the United States the last time around, Hillary. The Biden model was built on the Hillary model. Biden learned from Hillary that you can use your influence to sell office abroad. You can collect money from China. You can collect money from other countries. In the case of the Clintons, they were even ripping off aid money that was intended for Haiti. And you say, well, Dinesh, no one really believes that. Well, the Haitians do. That's why the Haitians would have regular protests and demonstrations in front of the Clinton Foundation. Protests, by the way, ignored by the media, because think of the damning imagery of black Haitians yelling and screaming and telling the Clintons that they ripped off a famine and earthquake devastated country. So that's who these people are. They pretend to be idealists. They talk about social justice. They're out for themselves. Now, the Democratic Party was started by a crook, Andrew Jackson. You only have to read the book Jackson Land, which is a kind of damning indictment of the way that Andrew Jackson... Now, Andrew Jackson had good qualities. He was a patriot. He did fight bravely for America, but he also did not hesitate to make money on the side. He would push these Indian tribes off their land, and the idea was for the land to then be auctioned for settlers. But Jackson knew which land was coming up for auction. So what he would do is he and his friends would start up companies and they would go in and put early bids on the land. So they were able to buy this land at rock bottom prices. And then they would sell it for a tremendous markup. And Jackson became fabulously wealthy as a result. So you can see that this is sort of a Democratic Party tradition of enriching yourself, you may say, at the public expense. And in that sense, Biden is simply the latest installment in that tradition. Now, I'm not saying all Democrats have been in the tradition. I mean, Jimmy Carter didn't enrich himself in office, and certainly neither did Harry Truman. So there are Democrats who are, at least from a personal point of view, not using the country as their personal piggy bank. But we have a guy who has become expert over his career in doing it. We can only hope that his senility is so far advanced that it interrupts his corruption. We can only hope that he doesn't really know what's going on, and he doesn't know, in a sense, which vaults to clean out. I think we're in for a difficult period in America. It's not a comfortable thought for our society to have installed a burglar in chief, but we have him, and we're going to have, at least for the present, to live with him. We'll be right back. If you're anything like the millions of frustrated Americans looking for an alternative to that other senior organization, I want you to know about AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. AMAC is the fastest growing conservative 50-plus organization in America. Over 2 million people have joined and now carry the AMAC membership card. AMAC was built by folks who feel the same way we do. We're not alone. AMAC believes in and stands up for the values that have made America great: faith, family, and freedom. They believe in the sanctity of the Constitution, including the First and Second Amendments. They're fighting the good fight against reckless government spending and the ever-expanding scope of the federal government. They're pro-business, secure borders, they support our military, and respect our veterans. AMAC works hard to deliver real value to their members, providing the best benefits, discounts, and services you can find in one place. I want you to join AMAC today. Debbie and I just became lifetime members. Go to amac.us and join now. Join AMAC today. Go to amac.us. You can join. Trump has finally exited the scene. And quite honestly, we don't know when or how he will be back. Trump wrote his book, The Art of the Comeback, but what shape that comeback will take remains unknown. At this point, Trump, in a sense, is a little bit of a forlorn figure. He is the lion in winter. And the left, which continues in its rabid hatred of Trump, has been trying to, you may almost say, punch him on the way out. And the charges are flying fast and furious. And it's almost like they're trying to intensify. Let's still go after him. Let's still impeach him. Let's put him in prison if we can. Now, the stated allegations against Trump, this whole question of why they hate him so much, is a very interesting puzzle. What is it about Trump that gets them to this degree? The stated allegations appear almost preposterous. Trump is a racist. Well, can you name something that Trump has said? Let's just say about blacks. What is the most racist thing Trump has said about blacks? And when you ask this of blacks who don't like Trump, they start sputtering. They can't think of anything, literally. Trump doesn't like Mexicans. He doesn't like Latinos. And is that why Trump got a higher share, an unprecedented share of the Latino vote? He won whole Latino towns in southern Texas that were traditionally Democratic. That makes no sense. Trump is a dictator. Really? Did Trump do any of these things that the left is doing now? Did Trump censor anybody? Did he go after reporters and ban them? Did he shut down CNN? Did he do the kind of things Mussolini would have done, for example, as a dictator to his opposition? No. It was ultimately social media, the digital moguls, who silenced Trump, not the other way around. Trump wasn't a dictator. Trump was a Nazi. He reminds you of early Nazism. Perhaps he didn't do the Holocaust, but he was Hitler circa 1933. First of all, Trump couldn't have been Hitler circa 1933 because the Nazis were National Socialists. And whatever you can say about Trump, he wasn't a socialist. Oh, Dinesh, don't bring that up again. The Nazis just called themselves National Socialists. That wasn't what they actually believed. Oh, really? Well, I have in my hands the Nazi 25-point plan that brought the Nazi Party to power. This was their campaign platform. I'm going to read a few elements from it. The state shall ensure that every citizen has a decent living and a decent livelihood. All unearned income and all income that does not arise from work should be abolished. We therefore demand the total confiscation of all war profits. We demand the nationalization of all trusts. We demand profit sharing in large industries. We demand a generous increase in old age pensions. We demand agrarian reform and the enactment of laws to expropriate the owners without compensation of any land needed for common purposes, the abolition of rent. We demand that the state assume the responsibility of higher education. The state has a duty to help raise the standard of national health by providing maternity welfare centers. In order to carry out this program, we demand the creation of a strong central authority in the state. So that's the essence of fascism, and that it's right there in the Nazi platform, a strong centralized state. Mussolini summarized fascism as everything in the state, nothing outside the state. So that's the left. This sounds like a platform that Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders or Kamala Harris would be on board with, not Trump. Trump is not a Nazi. So what's the deal with Trump? Where does the hatred come from? I believe it's really this. It is that Trump embodies the qualities of American exceptionalism that the left wants to kill, that the left absolutely hates. First, patriotism. Trump's America First is the simple idea that we in America should look out for America. We care about our country. We have a humanitarian interest in the world, but we're going to protect ourselves first. This expression, this naked, unabashed expression of patriotism, the left despises. Second, entrepreneurship. Trump is the quintessential capitalist. He's even flashy about it. And the left hates entrepreneurship. They hate the entrepreneurial spirit. Third, Trump represents, and this is a little paradoxical, you've got this unusual man who represents Christianity, represents the defense of traditional values. Now, one might not have expected him to do it, but he became the greatest champion, for example, of the pro-life cause of any president in my lifetime. Now, the bottom line of it is that Trump came onto the stage almost in a sense by diving in. We had been living in an era where the Reagan era had come to an end. The Reagan era, which began in 1980, really ended in 2008 when Obama took office. But even Obama felt the cross currents of the Reagan era. In other words, Obama took devastating losses in 2010 in the midterm, devastating losses again in 14 in the second midterm. So when 2016 came along, the left thought, okay, this era of divided government, where the Republicans have the presidency for the most part, and we have the Congress, or the opposite way, we have the presidency under Clinton, the Republicans have Congress, we want to put that behind us. We want to begin, you may say, a new democratic era. Remember, the Democrats had control from 1932 to 1980. America was a one-party state in that era. And the Democrats thought in 2016, we're going to be one again. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, here comes this crazy guy, Trump, and he upsets the apple cart, and he spoils the plan, and he spoils all the things that were put in place to make the plan work. And so the Democrats went, this is unacceptable. We've got to get rid of this guy one way or the other. And they've been trying to do it for 4 years, and they've used all kinds of underhanded tactics to do it. And finally, in 2020, they've done it. They got rid of Trump. It's not the case that they've got a one-party state, at least not yet. They've got the Congress, but only by a hair. They've got the Senate, but the Senate is a tie. They literally have to drag in Kamala Harris to have their one-seat majority. And they do have the presidency, although they don't have the court. So are we in for an era of one-party rule? I'm not sure. Time will tell. What we do know is that Trump was that immovable boulder that stood recalcitrantly in the way. And for four glorious years, he flummoxed them. He stopped them. He blocked them. He got tax reform through. He remade the courts. And perhaps most enjoyable of all, he drove them nuts. We'll miss him. I'll be right back. The left is undertaking a project, and we see all kinds of examples of it now, strewn throughout the media, of trying to somehow deprogram, or one might say reprogram, Trump supporters. This isn't just about targeting the people who stormed the Capitol. It isn't even about targeting the people who were in D.C. It's actually about trying to figure out what to do with half the country, the 75 million people and presumably their families that support Trump. It's what to do about the entire MAGA Republican movement, excluding perhaps only the never Trumpers. Here's an article by Graham Wood in The Atlantic. And the rhetoric is worth paying some attention to because of how it goes. First of all, he goes that law enforcement should hunt down and charge all the insurrectionists. He recognizes that some of these people are totally harmless. He refers to, quote, grannies posing for photos. Grannies posing for photos that somehow found their way into the Capitol. What does he think should happen to such people? He thinks they should be locked up. He goes, prisons exist to hold people such as these. Prisons don't exist, evidently, for murderers, coyotes, people who beat up their spouses. They don't exist for burglars. They exist for grannies who found their way into the Capitol to take selfies. This is the mentality of the left today. He then goes on to say that 74 million Americans voted for Trump. And then he says, I'm quoting, if you think MAGA is a terror movement, and he's okay with you thinking that, he goes, we can't subdue and destroy it using the tools that have destroyed Al-Qaeda, the Islamic State, and terror groups before them. MAGA is far more entrenched and impossible to eradicate using any means dreamt of by counterterrorism. So he's actually saying that he could, if he would, drone these people and bomb them and use ISIS tactics. His only worry is that those tactics may not work. In fact, he goes on to say that when you sometimes bomb terror movements, it only strengthens them. So his argument against bombing, evidently fellow American citizens, killing, if you will, Trumpsters, is not that that's wrong, that you shouldn't do that to your fellow citizens, that this is not how democracy works. None of that. His argument is that that may only make them stronger. It's a prudential argument. Now, when we talk about deprogramming and reprogramming Trumpsters, which is kind of the fallback position, if we can't kill them, let's reprogram them. But how? That's the question I have. How do you intend to reprogram these people? And you might say, well, we're doing it through the media, we're doing it through education. Well, you've been doing that for years. It evidently hasn't worked. Half the country would not have voted for Trump if your deprogramming and reprogramming were successful. So if you want to do real reprogramming, you're going to have to do something beyond that. Now, I had a little bit of deprogramming myself when my judge, this is Judge Richard Berman of New York, a truly clownish and absurd character. He was a divorce judge apparently before, but he's like, Dinesh, I think you could use some psychiatric counseling. It's going to be good for you. So in other words, supposedly this deprogramming was for my benefit. And he sends me in San Diego to a government psychiatrist. In fact, he first sent me to a private psychiatrist. And the private psychiatrist said, there's nothing wrong with you, Dinesh. The judge is a kook. But when the judge heard that, he became very alarmed. This kind of worried look goes across his face. He goes, well, maybe you should see a government psychiatrist. So I go to this government psychiatrist. And he gives me this long questionnaire. And he concludes, Dinesh, you're perfectly normal. And then he said this, probably more normal than the guy who sent you here. And I didn't say anything because I didn't know if I was being recorded. You know, you're in a very weird situation when you're dealing with the law here. But what I want to get at is that this is the kind of way these people function. They somehow, I think he thought that if he put me through some sort of psychiatric deprogramming, I would perhaps cease to be a conservative and suddenly appear, you know, on the Rachel Maddow show or on MSNBC. But the deprogramming was a joke. It didn't work. And ultimately, the judge just threw up his hands. I guess he pronounced me incurable. Point I want to make here is that if you know anything about the real Trumpsters, and I'm talking here, I'm not talking about a couple of the guys just on social media. I'm talking about the real Trump constituency. These are people who have very hard lives. These are people, many of them working class guys, white or black or Latino. And you should read the book by Michel Lamont, the Harvard sociologist. It's called The Dignity of Working Men. It's really a terrific book. because it probes who these people are. I just want to read a couple of sentences from that book. I'll probably discuss it elsewhere on the podcast also, to give you an idea of who these people are and how they think. What she says is that these are people who get their dignity not through self-actualization, not by multicultural pontification. They don't believe in any of that nonsense. That language ultimately has no meaning for them. They recognize that life is really hard, and they get a sense of self-satisfaction from a disciplined ethic of responsibility that gets them through the day. They believe that if they're able to work hard and provide for their families and get braces on their kids' teeth and put a roof over their families' heads, they've done something. These are, you may call them, the people who value responsibility. Now, naturally, because they're that way, and they know it's not easy to be that way, this is not just a matter of waking up early in the morning, it's having the discipline to wake up early in the morning every day. And so when you have this internalized responsibility and it's a struggle, you develop a natural contempt for people who laugh at that, for people who despise of it, that, for freeloaders, for people who go, I don't have an intention to even look for a job. Why do I need a job when I can collect benefits? So what happens is these people have, Michelle Lamont says, a kind of natural working class conservatism. They're no-nonsense people. They're also hard people in a way because they've taken hard knocks from life. These are the kind of people who you can't walk into their yard and start messing with their car. These are people you can't say insulting things to their wife without them getting a little bent out of shape. So I just want to say that these are not people who are very easily reprogrammed or deprogrammed. You'd literally have to establish a Maoist-style state to do it. And good luck with that enterprise. The bottom line of it is there's a hardy American toughness that is behind the Trump movement. That's not going away. It's sticking with Trump even now. Look at the opinion polls. Trump's support hasn't moved. And it hasn't moved because these people are loyal. And why are they loyal to Trump? Not because they're members of a cult, but because Trump is the only guy who's shown that he actually cares about them. I remember in 2016, 4 years ago, I saw on CNN, of all places, a working class guy. I can't remember if he was from Michigan or if he was from Pennsylvania. And he was talking to CNN, and they asked him, why did you vote for Trump? You could tell the reporter had this look of consternation on her face. And his answer was really simple. He goes, voting for Trump was like voting for my dad. He said basically that my dad was saying the things all his life that Trump believed. My dad was a working class guy, a guy who had to fight to put food on the table. And Trump spoke up for that guy and reflected his values. So you have this unlikely prospect of a billionaire who lives in gold-plated rooms, making himself the voice, literally the voice, of the working class. So these people know that they have an unlikely defender in Trump who won't sell him out and didn't sell him out. These are not people who are very easy to convince. Oh, you're a member of a cult. Oh, come into our reprogramming session, sir. We've got a psychiatrist from Bowdoin College who wants to talk to you. Try that, you fools, and see where it gets you. I'll be right back. Welcome, Mike Lindell. I want to thank you for coming on the podcast. I've read your book, and in your book, you tell this amazing story of a guy who was down and out, who was addicted to drugs, who looked like he had absolutely no future. And then through a combination of faith and creativity and perhaps a little bit of luck, you rebounded. And you didn't just rebound by overcoming the drugs. You became a kind of poster boy of American creativity, American entrepreneurship. You built a massive company. You were a hero to the media. You were profiled in local magazines and publications. And then suddenly, from the left's point of view, you suddenly became a villain. What would you say was the turning point in making these people suddenly regard you as a bad guy?
Well, that's easy. I can point to it. In the summer of 16, then President-elect Donald Trump reached out to me in a meeting we had on August 15, 2016, And I flew out there, went in, that walked into his office, and we talked about all these things he was going to do. Mike, you make your pillows here in the U.S. He says, I want to bring the jobs back. And he goes, and I talked to him. I said, I used to be an addict, and I'm going to help millions of people with a recovery network. And he says, I'm going to stop the job or the drugs pouring in. So we had all these back and forth talk, but he was telling me all the things he was going to do. And I walked out of there. I'm going, wow, he's going to be the greatest president ever. I talked to his employees. They all said what a great man he is, great leader, and he had helped them personally. I got back to Minnesota, and I did a press release and told everyone, hey, I met Donald Trump, in a meeting. You guys wanted, I figured that'd be big news, right? I didn't even tell him what we talked about. It was crickets, and then it started. I had never seen anything like it. They called me a racist. They called me a social media, emails, and these were from from media outlets. And so I went through that. Better Business Bureau took me from an A plus to an F. And so that was one attack. Then I got attacked last spring. These are the biggest attacks now. When I spoke from the Rose Garden and told us all to get in our word, get in the Bibles and pray. And then the other one was this summer when the myoleander.com, when I came out with that, I was attacked by media. That was one of the worst until this one. This one now is just over the top. They're attacking box stores I do business with. They're bots and trolls, and they're hired groups, hit groups that say, take this guy down. And I probably have one of the biggest attacks on me of anything because they're so worried right now.
And you said this is a coordinated attack, not just in the United States, but they're attacking your suppliers even abroad. Where abroad are they going after you?
Well, I have Australia, New Zealand. I have a couple guys over there I've dealt for 10 years. They sell my pillow. They're just vendors that do home shows and fairs. They have a lot of employees. And they said even over there, they're being attacked, by these groups.
Now, these I assume that the rationale for these attacks is that you're a Trump supporter. But let's go further. They'll say, you're alleging election fraud. You're a kook. Now, let's just say that all of this is true. Here's my question. What does this have to do with selling towels and pillows and bed sheets and robes? In other words, this is not a case of someone saying that your ideas can't be transmitted through their platform. You're not transmitting your ideas at Bed Bath & Beyond. You were selling robes and sheets and towels. So what reason did they give you for why they're canceling you?
Well, they're living in fear. It's the old, it's all, the left, they've been doing this for years, trying to cancel people out, cancel companies out. And when I talk to some of the box stores, I've been able to, say, hey, these aren't real people. They don't even understand, their social media people, that these are groups that sit in a war room and just type in one after another these attacks on social media. And I explained that to him, and I said, your real customers are going to be very upset. You're not carrying my pillow. And some of them stayed on. But now the list got bigger today. They're piling on, and we can't have this. This time around, we can't have this. And then I asked him, I said, these attacks started, I said, because we have new evidence that was found 10, 12 days ago when we tried to put it out there. This is the machine fraud with Dominion. As soon as we put up an example of that, they took down websites, they took down Twitters, they took down mine, but they left it up there and they're running it from the back end. But all these attacks came from that. And then Dominion put a letter out there that they had sent me 2 weeks ago. We're going to sue you. I welcome them to sue me because maybe the evidence will get out there even quicker than the channels we're going through now, because we can't even get the evidence out there because this is something they don't want. Because this was massive machine fraud, massive countries that attacking our country, starting with China.
Mike, I want to talk about fighting back here, because it seems to me that if this kind of tactic succeeds, they're going to keep doing it. They're going to keep pushing it. Let me ask you a specific question. What percentage currently of your business is through the retail stores versus direct?
Oh, it can be about 50-50, but I guess lately it's went this year maybe up to about 70%, 30%, because online's a little busier with this this China virus thing they're telling us that is out there. But that's a moving target. But they everybody, they've stepped it up the last few days, and everybody's buying online. They're buying my book that I got for $9.97 now out there. I bought 3 million books. I'm putting it out there with free shipping. And I am just, everybody's responding to help out, because I'll tell you what, I will not back down, and I will not back down in something I believe in. I've seen the evidence. I've seen it. I'm not going to back down to this, and people are going to have to learn by an example. God's going to reward me for all for doing the right thing. You know, when you have these boycotts that are for bad things, they lose. If you're boycotting somebody for something that's really, you know, terrible, I don't know what that would be, to boycott somebody for something else that is over here. It doesn't make sense. But I just think, this is going to be a great example, because I think they wanted to start at the most vocal person out there attacking me and then work their way down.
Mike, one of the most important things you just said is that you will not back down. And I love that about you, because there are times when we all come under the gun. I've come under the gun. I think it is a measure of us in those circumstances that shows our strength of character. I want people to realize that the most effective way to fight back, you know, some people say, well, I won't shop at Bed Bath & Beyond. Well, the most effective way to fight back is to prove that this attack on you should not work and will not work. And the way to do that is for our team to come out and say, you know what? We're going to support Mike more than ever. We're going to buy his stuff. And by the way, partly because he's a brave man, but also partly because he's got really good stuff. By the way, I don't know if you saw the funny picture I just put out. I was wearing your pajamas. I love them. They're so soft. Yeah. And Debbie took a photo of me just lying on my couch and reading one of my classics. And it was just wonderful. So we're enjoying your merchandise. It's Debbie loves your pillow. She says, I'm going through that time of life, and I can sleep for the first time through the night undisturbed. So we love the stuff. We know that people will love it too. So I want people to go to mypillow.com. I want them to look at all the wide range of stuff that Mike has available. I want them to support Mike, especially now. Just remember to click on the promo code Dinesh, and let's support Mike Lindell. Mike, thanks for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me on. And by the way, with your Dinesh code, they can save up to 66% off all the products, which we have over 110 products. We're not just a pillow.
It's awesome. It's called MyPillow, but it's got all kinds of stuff. So go to mypillow.com and click on promo code Dinesh. We'll be right back. There's a continuing effort on the part of the Democrats to go after Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley and other senators who supported an audit or investigation of the election result. Joe Biden himself jumped into the fray on this with a comment that likened people like Cruz and Hawley to Adolf Hitler and the Nazis. Listen.
And some of my colleagues, Republican colleagues, talk about how shameful it is of the way Ted Cruz and others are dealing with this, how they're responsible as well for what happened.
Do you think some of them should resign? Should Senator Cruz or Senator Hawley resign?
I think they should be just flat beaten the next time they run. I think the American public has a real good, clear look at who they are. They're part of the big lie. The big lie. I was being reminded by a friend of mine. Maybe you were with me. I can't recall. When we were told that, you know, Goebbels and the great lie, you keep repeating the lie, repeating the lie.
Goebbels. You can tell you've got a semi-educated guy when he's like Hitler and his famous Lieutenant Goebbels. Anyway, we're not dealing with top-level scholarship here. But very interestingly, Biden's allusion to the big lie has been echoed all over the place. I saw a tweet by Bill Kristol, and Bill Kristol is talking about Trump's big lie. And then I see that Katie Couric was on the Bill Maher show, and she was babbling about the big lie. Katie Couric is talking about the big lie. Here's somebody, never was a person with so little talent who got so far on the simple idea of cuteness. Oh, she's so cute. But she's even talking about the big lie. So let's zoom in on this a little bit because it requires a little bit of investigation. First of all, the underlying assumption here, assumption widely shared on the left, is that Hitler was an advocate of big lies. Hitler supposedly was famous for making the comment that small lies can be detected, can be checked out, can be verified. But big lies are easier to sell than small lies, precisely because they're so huge, it's tough to get your head around them. Now, I know a lot about this topic. I am actually the author of this book, The Big Lie. And it's a book about the fascist roots, the Nazi roots even, of the left. It turns out that when Hitler talked about the big lie, he was not in fact referring to himself. He was referring to the Jews. Hitler's point is that the Jews are liars. The Jews are the ones who put out these big lies about Germany. The Jews are the ones who con everybody. So you'll notice that suddenly Biden's remarks take on a whole new meaning. Why? Because here's Hitler, himself a congenital liar, lying about the Jews, lying about the target of his attack. He's blaming them for something that he's actually doing. And that is exactly what's going on here with Biden. The real liar isn't Cruz, isn't Hawley, it's Biden himself. So let's zoom into that and ask this question. What are these big lies that Biden is talking about? Let's look at a couple of them. There's no evidence of election fraud. Is that a lie? Is there, in fact, no evidence of election fraud? Show me the proof of that. Where is the place in which the issue of election fraud was adjudicated in such a way that a rational conclusion was arrived at? There is no evidence of election fraud. Election fraud did not affect the outcome. Again, pure speculation. Did it? Didn't it? Where's the proof? There hasn't been proof either way. There hasn't actually been a hearing where the claims of fraud have been put forward, where they've been challenged or rebutted, and where some kind of decision could be made. Now, it's one thing to say that something lacks substantive proof, but if something lacks substantive proof, it doesn't make it a lie. If I were to say there's life on other planets, I don't have proof. I could be wrong, but I could also be right. It's very even difficult to say what the probability is that I'm wrong, let alone that I'm lying. I'm not lying. So Biden's claim that Hawley and Cruz are lying is itself a lie. He's the one perpetrating the lie and trying to pin it on the targets of his accusation. Now, Josh Hawley, in responding to Biden's attack, uses the typical Republican words, which is, this is appalling. Here's an article. Shameful, says Missouri Senator. And this is typical Republican boilerplate. And to me, it's nonsense, because just calling these things words doesn't do anything. You've got to show why it's nonsense. You've got to show why Biden's allusion to the big lie applies more to himself than it does to Cruz or Hawley. So I'd like to call the Republican Party to get out of this, you may almost call it boilerplate rhetoric. If someone is calling you a name, show exactly why that accusation is false. Make your case. Don't just result in the normal press release language. This is disappointing. This is appalling. I demand an apology. This kind of stuff may have gotten the Republican Party to where it is, but look where the Republican Party is. We need a new way of thinking, a new incisiveness rooted in knowledge. One of the purposes of this show is to provide grounding for arguments. The reason that a lot of these clowns from Katie Couric on won't have me on their shows is they can't use phrases like the big lie to me because I know the context of it. I will destroy them in 5 minutes, and they know that. Rachel Maddow knows that. So what these people really do is they rely on what you could call the argumentum ad ignorantium, the argument directed at the ignorant and relying on ignorance, relying on the ignorance of its audience to go, oh yeah, that's just the kind of Hitlerian big lie we've come to expect from the right. When knowledge kicks in, all of this nonsense melts away. We'll be right back. Have you got problems with the IRS? I got to tell you about a time not so long ago when the big bad U.S. government tried to make an example out of me. So I know firsthand the importance of having proper representation to protect your freedom, and that's also true of your finances. You don't want them to be taken away by the IRS. Now, Ryan, Danica, and the Christian folks at South Coast Tax will discuss your unique situation and create a tailored framework of how to attack the situation head-on with the IRS and allow you a true fresh start. South Coast Tax has an amazing settlement average, 3 cents on the dollar, or a 97% reduction rate, along with an A-plus rating with the BBB. With 20 years of experience alone, Ryan told me he has yet to see a tax situation that has stumped him. And that's pretty impressive when you consider the size of the tax law. So call Ryan at 800-TAX-3156. Call Ryan at 800-TAX-3156 or check out their website at www.southcoasttaxresolution.com. You'll see for yourself, it'll be the best move you ever made and the first step in getting your financial freedom back. It was Scott Fitzgerald in The Great Gatsby who said of Gatsby that he had an extraordinary gift for hope. And Fitzgerald meant that to apply not just to Gatsby, but to America, that America represents the land of hope. And it has been. Now, hope is different than optimism. Optimism is the idea that things are going to get better. Whereas hope is the expectation or the prophecy, the wish that things will get better, and a sustaining desire to push forward in that faith. I'm here with my wife, Debbie, and one of the things we're determined to do is not let our life be ruined by Bidenism and by the left. We want to have a happy life and a happy marriage. Now, Debbie's a jack of all trades. She's the producer of this podcast. She runs our whole domestic operation. She calls herself my happiness consultant. And she's also a singer, a professional singer. When we were first courting, and she told me, I'm a singer. I kind of thought, like, you know, what she means is that she likes to sing in the bathroom. But then I went to an event organized by a Republican club, and Debbie sang, and I literally had my jaw drop because I realized, oh, my God. So anyway, I don't know. If you've seen my movies, you've heard Debbie sing. In a couple of them, she sings, and you don't see her. It's just the voice. It was in Death of a Nation, I think, that you did a live performance, so you could see you sing, although you said it didn't look like you, and nobody knew it was you. But in the new movie, the latest film, Trump Card, which, by the way, you can watch at home. Trump Card is available, trumpcardthemovie.com, that's the website. So much of that movie lays out the prospect of a United States of socialism, precisely what we're facing now. But I thought on this inauguration day would be poignant to close out with Debbie's song that also closes out. It's part of the movie, and it also closes out the movie. So tell about the song, what it means to you, and a little bit about how we chose this song for you to sing, and what are they going to expect when they hear you?
Well, this is America the Beautiful. Not to be confused with God Bless America, America the Beautiful. And we wanted to just bring about the hope that this great country has. And we thought that we would do this song during the Lincoln footage of Trump Card. But Brian Miller, who did the score for Trump Card, came up with this beautiful arrangement.
I mean, you told me it's the most beautiful.
It's the most beautiful arrangement I've ever heard. And literally that morning that I recorded it, it really overwhelmed me emotionally. I couldn't even get through singing the song because just so many emotions went through the song. I have to say that today I'm very sad about what's taking place today, what took place today. Biden saying that we need to unify. You know, I don't really want to unify. We didn't unify for 4 years with Trump, and I'm just not about to do it now. However, I will say that I do have great hope. I'm a Christian woman. I'm religious, and that keeps me grounded. Our marriage keeps me grounded. I love you to pieces, and that always keeps me grounded. But I feel like this song starts off in a minor key.
Signifying what?
Signifying sadness.
Melancholy.
And turmoil and melancholy. But it doesn't end that way. So I want people to take great hope in that.
The video you're about to see is the making of the song. So you not only see Debbie singing, this isn't just the performance in the movie. This is actually footage not in the movie, background footage with the, with Brian Miller, who composed the arrangement.
Yes.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. And then also the symphony orchestra.
Budapest Symphony Orchestra.
So this is amazing. So, you've got Debbie singing, you've got Brian recording, and the music is coming out of Budapest, and it all comes together in the movie Trump Card. So watch that film if you haven't already, and we leave you with this, I think, chilling and touching and beautiful rendition of God Bless America.